Okay, so we're just going to be beginning with Caleb. So I'm looking forward to this particular study, and several others have mentioned that as well. Caleb is quite an impressive character, but he's also one of those who kind of flies under the radar because of his counterpart, Joshua. Joshua is real well known. And just in my time this last few weeks, I've known about Caleb. I've preached on Caleb before and know the facts, but I really have a new appreciation for him as he stood there alongside Joshua. And there's some ways in which his faith is as great as Joshua's, although they had two different jobs when it came to serving the Lord, when it came to their place in the people of Israel. And by the way, there's also handouts in the back for Caleb if you'd like to grab one of those. Or Ronnie's got anybody. Does anyone need a handout? If you raise your hand, Ronnie can bring you one. He's volunteering for that. Just raise your hand and Ronnie will get you one of those here in just a moment. We're going to be picking up with Caleb this morning. He's quite the fella, and I think you'll appreciate his faith and his example.
I can't hear you back here in the back.
Okay. Anybody know how to work the mic system? Cole, would you up mic? See, all right, y'all two can duke it out back there. 22 heads, you can figure it out, surely. All right, just up mic one. That's the lapel mic. So, and I can go ahead and raise this up a little bit at the same time without me blasting everyone's eardrums out. I'm bad enough about that as it is. Okay, so let's just jump into our questions as they kind of lead us through the narration. And these kind of just make these a free-for-all. And maybe down a little bit. We got a little bit of an echo there. But let's just go ahead and start with our questions, and we'll work our way through and read some of the text and learn a little bit about Caleb. All right, question number one. Dick, you want to do that for us?
Caleb and 11 others were sent as spies into the land of Canaan.
Okay. Caleb and 11 others were sent as spies into the land of Canaan. There in Numbers 13, let's start by reading the first three verses. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving the people of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, every one a chief among them." So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord, all of the men who were heads of the people of Israel. Okay, so God's promise to Abraham, that is the land, is soon to be fulfilled. So why bother spying out the land? And this is kind of an extra question. Why bother, think about this, why bother spying out the land if God was going to give it to them? Why did God send them? The land has been promised. God's going to give it. He's faithful. He's true. Why bother going and spying out the land?
He said to.
Okay. He said to?
He may have wanted them to see what they were up against as a way to test their faith.
Okay. He may have wanted them to see what they were up against to test their faith. That's good, Hope. I like the way you're thinking there. In fact, we're going to see that word test come up frequently in the book of Deuteronomy. And as Jim said, certainly, he sent them because the Lord said go. And when the Lord says go, that's really all the reason you need. Interestingly, I'm going to look at... Let me see if I've got this passage in Deuteronomy. I don't think I jotted it down. Let me look real quick. Reference. You may go ahead and hold where you're at, Numbers 13. I'm turning to Deuteronomy 1 just very briefly. Let me see. Okay. Well, there's a passage in Deuteronomy that kind of gives us a different direction regarding the situation of sending the Israelites to go and spy out the land. I'll mention it in just a moment. Tommy?
Oh, yeah. Just follow along with the same thing that Jimmy Dale and Holden saying about that being God's will. And mm-hmm. It's kind of like us today. We have to look and see what the reward is versus what we have to put out the effort for.
Okay.
It's in our daily lives or our spiritual life. We know that we can't imagine how good heaven is going to be. So that makes what we have to do in our daily lives to be Christians worth the effort.
Okay. Certainly to get a sense of the motivation, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we would be well served to stop and think about heaven more often, wouldn't we? And the reward that God has waiting for us to serve as an incentive, because times are hard. And as we're going to see what the Israelites are being asked to do, it was very hard. Some have suggested that it was a lack of faith on behalf of the spies. The Deuteronomy account, and I'll have to find this passage next week. I had it and I thought I jotted it down, but apparently I didn't. It appears on one hand in Numbers 13, you've got the Lord who says, go, send the spies into Israel. But in Deuteronomy, it kind of tells it from a different perspective where the people go and say, hey, we want to go spy out the land. Moses takes the situation to God and God says, okay, go spy out the land. Take one man from each of the 12 tribes, each of them a leader. Okay, so you kind of have the Numbers account saying, God saying go. And then the Deuteronomy account, you've got the people who say, well, we want to kind of get a glimpse at the land. And if you think about it also, this is somewhat of a tactical decision. Look at Deuteronomy 1, let's read verses 21 through 23. See, the Lord your God has set the land before you. Go up, take possession as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has told you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Then all of you came near me and said, let us, and here's the passage here, so apparently I did jot it down. Let us, you all came before near me and said, let us send men before us that they may explore the land for us and bring us word again of the way by which we must go up and the cities into which we shall come. So the thing seemed good to me, and I took 12 men from you, one man from each tribe. Okay, so there's kind of the human perspective, the corresponding side. In Numbers 13, it just seems like God says go to those 12 spies. And on the other side, it seems like God's responding to a request that was made by the Israelites, saying, hey, we want to go look at the land. We want to go spy the land out before we actually enter into it to take it. So Moses says, go get it. And the people requested sending the spies out. And they sit and they make a plan. And so it seems like the idea originated with God's people. And it was commissioned, if you will, by God. They say, hey, we want to go. So God says, take 12 men, one from each tribe, and spy out the land. And something worth considering here, faith doesn't always shoot from the hip. You know, there are times, and certainly it's admirable, whenever someone's put in a position and they have to make a spur-of-a-moment decision, you know, and in those situations, it's best to let faith guide us. At the same time, we shouldn't just walk around completely unprepared for the things that we're doing and for a life of service to God, having just to sporadically respond to whatever's in our heart at the time. What I see here is foresight and forethought as the people are preparing to go into Canaan. And this is a major commission. And as they're preparing to go, it seems like they're wanting to be as prepared as possible. And so you've got God and man working cooperatively together. God says, I'm going to give you the land, but you're going to have to go get it. Okay, and that's simply how God interacts with man. God's grace and God's strength is there for us, but we must reach for it in faith. Okay, and that's the promise you see reiterated through Deuteronomy. I've given you the land. It's yours, but you have to go take it. Okay, and so there's the grace of God in the giving and the faith that responds in the taking. So I don't see this, and some have suggested that this maybe was a lack of faith, that they wanted to go see, well, can we defeat the people that are there? I don't see this so much as a lack of faith, but rather as an expression of faith. Most of the time, we don't sit around waiting for God to deliver us. We pray and we beseech God, and then we reach out. We begin to act. We begin to move, and we allow God to respond and direct our path. Good. Dick?
Just a thought on what you're talking about. In verse 23 there, and the saying pleased me well. God was pleased that they wanted to go look at that land.
Okay, right.
He knew what it was, of course. Now they would go and know what it was.
Okay, is that Moses or God talking in the text?
Well,
Moses. So. I can't help but wonder if maybe God didn't. We know this is going to end in abject failure. so maybe there's a reason God didn't say okay. But then whenever they ask, as Hope was saying, there's an idea of their faith being tested a little bit. God says, okay, go. Look at the land. Look at the people that are there. Bring back some, as Tommy says, some of the fruit so that this can serve as a motivator for you to enter into the land and take what God has given you. Dave, did you want to comment? Did I see your hand back there?
No, I was just going to say that was Moses.
Okay.
You got Joshua and Caleb, but you also have in Romans 14:29 that says that we always assume that all of the males from 20 and up were killed, but it gives me the impression that maybe not every male.
Okay. Well, good.
And once that it says those whom grumbled against me.
Okay. Not every male was killed, like in the wilderness wandering, or. Okay, well, I'm going to have to think about that one. I've always ever assumed it was Joshua and Caleb, the only ones over 20, that made it. But we'll look at it more whenever we get to that point, if I remember. And that's a big if. Oh, well, we'll see. It won't be this week, probably. All right, well, there's your answer. Caleb and the 11 others, they were sent as spies into the land of Canaan. Okay, so some believe it as an expression of faith. Some see it as a manner of testing the hearts of the people to see if they're going to have faith, and this is something God does. This isn't a temptation, this is a test. And God does that oftentimes to reveal what's in the heart of men. Okay, God does that, and he's done that to his people in times of old. And I'm sure and I'm certain that God does that with his people today. He tests them and allows certain things to enter into their life to kind of gauge, allow them to gauge, he knows, where their faith is. Okay, and to grow from that. So, question two. Anybody?
Caleb was a leader from the tribe of Judah.
That's in Numbers 13, verses 3 and 6. So one man was chosen from each tribe, 12 men total. And this is something of a representative of the entire nation. So do we know much about the tribe of Judah at this point? We know in our New Testaments, Judah is going to emerge as a very significant tribe. Do we know much about Judah at this point? Not just a whole lot. One noteworthy thing, one we might bring attention to, is in Genesis 9 when Jacob is blessing his 12 sons. You remember there, kind of a prophetic utterance. While he's soon to die, he's blessing each of them. And there's somewhat of a foretelling in that. And he says that the scepter will not depart from Judah. So we do know Judah was a prestigious tribe. They received a large amount of the inheritance, which we find out in the book of Joshua. But this prophecy had been made by their father that the people of Judah were going to bring forth the kings for all of the people. And spoiler alert for those who don't know how the story ends, hopefully everyone here does, but if you don't know how it's going to end, the people are going to show themselves to be faithless. And stop and think about this. Who was it that was it? Was it just an average, ordinary citizen, a random man picked from each tribe? Who was it?
Leader.
Okay. It was a leader. It was a chief that was taken from each tribe. And so when you read through Exodus and Numbers and you see the faithlessness of the people, shouldn't be surprising that the leaders were faithless either, should it? Okay, they kind of took the head man from my understanding of each tribe, and that's just an expression of the people. And if your leader, who should be the boldest and the bravest and the most faithful and the most courageous, if he hadn't got the guts and the faith to follow the Lord, what's that going to say about the people? And, you know, they would stand as the example before the people. And so it's no surprise when we get later into the book of Numbers to find out that they were faithless. All right, let's later read a little more from Numbers chapter 13. Jim, would you mind reading verses 17 through 24 for us, please?
17 through 24.
Please, yes.
Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up to the north and south and go up to the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, and whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance of Hamath. And they went up through the south and came to Hebron, Adamon, Shishai, and Talmai. The descendants of Anak were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and there cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between two of them on a pole. They also brought some of the pomegranates and figs. The place was called the valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the men of Israel cut down there. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days.
That's good there, Jim. Thank you for reading that. Okay, how long had it been since the children of Israel had laid eyes, or God's people had laid eyes on the land of Canaan? This generation never had. How long had it been? Who was the last Israelite to see it?
Joseph and his brothers, their children.
Okay, yeah. Joseph and his brothers, and the ones before they went to Egypt, right? So.
Well, actually, most of them went back to bury Jacob.
Okay, yeah, they went back to the cave of Machpelah. You're right. While they were in Egypt, while they were still on good terms with the Egyptians, they were allowed that, you know, temporary departure. Then they went back, and doesn't seem to be any indication. Shortly after that, the bondage of the Egyptians kicked in, and they hadn't seen it since then. So we're probably looking at 350 to 400 years since a Jew has laid eyes on the promised land. You know, kind of listening to this, I can see where Dave's coming from a little bit, where he says it seems to him that this may be an expression of a weaker faith. You know, Just some of the things that are here. One, that this, while it was sanctioned by God, it didn't originate with God. Okay, it was the people that wanted us to go and see the land, and God allowed them to go and see the land. And Moses says, see if they are strong or weak. What does that matter? I mean, if you think about what Israel has done east of the Jordan before they cross over into the promised land, what does it matter if the enemies are strong or weak? Who's with them? God's with them. God broke the back of the Egyptians, who were the strongest nation at that point in time in that part of the world. And he set a group of slaves free. Okay, what does it matter if the people were strong or weak? But still, one maybe could look at this from the sense, well, they're going to have to fight these people. And so maybe militarily this is a wise move. As for faith, maybe not as much. But they were in the land for 40 days. We know numbers have significance in the Bible. Does anyone know what the number 40, when you see that number in the Bible, usually represents? What are some other instances where we have that number 40?
40 days and 40 nights.
Okay, 40 days, 40 nights in the wilderness here, the temptation.
Tempted 40 days.
Who?
Tempted.
Who was tempted for 40 days? Jesus was tempted for 40 days on the mountain. Good. Tommy?
40 days of rain.
40 days of rain. Is that what you were going to say, Jim? Okay. 40 days of rain. So you had Moses. You had this wandering for 40 years in the wilderness. You have Jesus on the mountain. And there are many other instances where the number 40 is used. And so if you think about all of those, can you see something that all of them have in common?
Fullness, completeness.
Okay. Fullness, completeness. Okay. Maybe. Yeah. That's good. That's what I say. I think it's a period of testing, and that kind of appears to be the general thinking on it. You know, the people were tested for 40 days as they go into the land of Canaan, and Jesus was tested 40 days on the mountain, and you know, the world was washed clean. 40 days and 40 nights of rain, a period of testing for the world, if you will, which you know only Noah and his family passed the test. So they're there in this land of Canaan, 40 days. They bring back a branch with a cluster of grapes so large that it had to be carried between two men. Okay. When they come back, what report was brought back to Moses by the ten?
The land was good.
Okay. Land was good. Any more detail, Tommy?
Well, it ended up being an evil report. They said the land was good, but... You know
how that's
like a
big freedom. But said
it had walled cities,
people
strong, and some of them
were giants.
Said Israel would be like grasshoppers.
Okay. Yeah. It's like there's what Dick said. It flows with milk and honey, but it wasn't all good news. The cities are fortified. The descendants of Anak are there. That is the Nephilim. Some versions translate that. The land is populated by enemy nations. Hey, Tommy, would you read Numbers 13, 25 through 29? That's just the spies' account there, their first account.
Sure. 25 through what?
29, please.
Okay. This is the King James Version. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel into the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh. And brought back word of them to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we came into the land whither thou sent us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong and dwell in the land, and cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there, and Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites. Well, by the sea, and by the coast of Jordan.
Good job pronouncing all those ites. There's a lot of those in the Bible, and they kind of get you tongue-tied a little bit, so good job reading that. Okay, so they bring back the word. It's exactly as God promised. Now remember, this would be a promise that was held very dear by God's people. In fact, you kind of see them desiring this even after they're taken back to Babylon. This land that God promised them, the land of Canaan, was one of the three things that God foretold Moses he was going to give him. He was going to give a great nation, he was going to give that nation the land, and he was going to bless the entire world through the nation. And so the land is just tied integrally to in the eyes of the people to the faithfulness of God. And you think of all the things that they had seen God do up to this point, this generation. They'd seen the disaster that befell Egypt. They saw all of the plagues and curses that God brought on them. They themselves had crossed over on the Red Sea, and they saw those waters pushed up by the wind that God sent. And they crossed through on dry land. They saw them later collapse upon the army of Pharaoh. They'd seen God come down on Mount Sinai. They had witnessed time and again the power of God, you know, over nature, over their enemies, over their oppressors. And then they had this commission where God says in Deuteronomy 1:8, "See, I have set the land before you. Go in and take possession of the land that was swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give to them and their offspring to them." So they come back and they report everything that God said is true. And I read from the ESV, and mine says, "Nevertheless." Tommy, yours says, "But." Nevertheless, but, same thing. What that means is, despite what we have just said, despite the fact that everything that God said was true of this land is true, the people are strong, the cities are large and fortified, the descendants of Anak are there, and the Amalekites, Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites, and Canaanites inhabit the land. What was Israel's problem? Testing reveals what's there. What did the test reveal about their faith?
Weak.
The lack of it. It was insubstantial. There was none. Tommy?
Yeah, well, we got to remember, at this time when he set the spies into it, this was before the 40 years of wandering.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably been a year or somewhere around a year since God has brought them out. And like you had mentioned, they had saw all these miracles, you know, in Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, bringing water out of the rocks, you know, the quail, all this stuff that they had seen with their own eyes within the last year. Yet they doubted God's power, you know, what he could do.
Yep, exactly. This wasn't something that was long removed from them, previous generations, you know, gone by. This was something that they had witnessed, right? This generation had witnessed this. And go read 1 Corinthians 10. It doesn't have very commending things to say about the people. And in fact, God himself says, he says, "You're a faithless and a stubborn generation." Okay, they had witnessed all of this, but yet the faith wasn't there. They had forgotten what God had done for them, and they looked through the events through earthly eyes. Okay, yes, there were fortified cities. Yes, there were enemies that were great and numerous. Yes, there were giants in the land. But have they forgotten, you know, what God did to Sihon and Og and how they had defeated them? Have they forgotten? Well, actually, you know, Tommy, you're right. I'm kind of getting ahead of things. That's in Deuteronomy, where that's later going to occur. But they'd witnessed the power of God, at the very least, in breaking the back of the Egyptians. And they witnessed the power of God. They'd eaten the manna, those various things there. And so they had evidence that should have convinced them God is for us, God can't be stopped, God's purposes can't be thwarted. And so they simply looked through the scenario through earthly eyes. And it's easy to criticize these guys. You hear the things that I'm saying about them. It's easy to criticize them, but then we need to look at ourselves and say, well, would I do any differently if I were in their position? And maybe we could even turn that question more inward and say, whenever I'm faced with testing today, whenever hardship comes upon me and I can't see a way out through human eyes, how do I respond to that? Does my faith grow weak like theirs? Do I turn cowardly and my unbelief emerge? Or like Cole was saying, is the testing of my faith, does that prove that there's something genuine and substantial there, that it burns away the chaff and leaves something pure behind? Okay. And so, you know, before we criticize them too harshly, we may need to humble ourselves and say, well, what would I have done if I were in that position? You know, how would I have responded? And we can have a sense of that answer by saying, well, how do I respond now? You know, do I just throw up my hands when hardship comes and allow doubt and unbelief to take over? Or do I hold on to my faith? Do I trust in the Lord? Do I move forward? Do I keep trusting God? Comments, questions? Dave?
It's interesting, too, that God wanted them to
if you look at the way the path was, he kept him away from some of those big people because God knew that, hey, this is too much for them to take on right now. But for whatever reason, when they get around to wherever it is that they're fixing to send out the spies and do their thing, they haven't, like we talked about, matured enough faith to realize, hey, God was watching out for us. Hey, all that he said is true. All before, all the things that happened. You would have thought that they could be at a point where they could all agree as leaders, yes, we've seen it.
Right. Yeah, and that's a good point. God took them, he protected them whenever they left Egypt. He kind of took them in a circuitous route so that they didn't have to tangle with some of the stronger enemies. Because, like I said, God knew what was in their heart. He knew it was going to be too much for them later. He knew it was going to be too much for them at the time. Yet they're the ones who are insistent, saying, let us go check the land out. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, here, this proving of their faith shows what's really there. But look at verse 30, Numbers 13. Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it. So, as you look at Caleb here, what are some things you can appreciate about him? I know we've kind of set the stage for Caleb to emerge here. He was one of the 12 spies that went in, along with Joshua and 10 others. What can you appreciate about what Caleb has to say in verse 30? Yeah, he's got confidence. Is his confidence in himself? The military might?
He says, we are well able.
Okay. Well, I guess if we'd continued reading, you know, and we're going to see another speech that he gives a little bit later on, he's going to point to God and says, hey, you know, we've seen what God can do. God will give us this land. But there also is a sense of self-confidence, too, because he knows his faith's in God. So you're right, David. Anyone else? Tommy?
Willing to stand against the majority.
Okay. I appreciate that. He stood up against the crowd. This man is outnumbered. He's outnumbered right now 10 to 2. But he's soon going to be outnumbered thousands to 2 or 3 if you throw Moses in with them. Okay, so he's outnumbered. And if you've ever found yourself in a position where you're against the majority, that can put pressure on you to yield to whatever, however firmly you may stand, hold an opinion, you know. And so I think there's a great degree of appreciation that we need to have. He stood there and he quieted all the people down. And that's hard to do. It's just hard to stand against the majority, even if you know you're right. Been easy for him just kind of backed off, let Moses take over. But he settles the people down. Listen. You know, we can take this land. We're able to do it. Buster?
I was saying confidence.
Okay. That's a good comment. I really appreciate that aspect, someone bringing that out. Okay, and so we see, you know, he stood up against the crowd. He's confident. He wasn't tentative. He was sure. He was holding on to faith. He was holding on to faith. Romans 3:4 says, let God be true and every man a liar. Caleb's holding on to that. Because everybody else is saying no, but he knows God's true. And everybody else is just, you can't measure up to the standard of truth which God puts forth. All right, anyway, Tommy, did I see you?
Now, continue on that same thought. It's not enough for us just to hold down our heart that the majority is wrong. We have to speak up. You know, we have to show our faith. We have to speak up and, you know, let people know where we stand.
We're going to talk about that more this morning in our lesson. So that's but you're right, you know, our faith can't be silent. Faith can't be silent. And Caleb wasn't. He stood up and he spoke. All right, we won't get too far into this. David, would you kind of set us up for some concluding comments and then our study next week will probably begin here. David, would you read Numbers 13, 31, all the way down to 14 and verse 4?
Sure. But the man who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people. They are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel that report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their own, and so we were in their sight. So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or only if we had died in this wilderness, why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt.
So Thank you, David. Up to this point, the 10 spies, the faithful spies, they hadn't stated their views. They simply said from a very negative perspective, this is what we saw. However, Caleb rises up and says, hey, don't be afraid. We can take this land. God's going to give us this land. And so now what had been stated by implication, they share their experience. And so they, through use of a small bit of truth, exaggeration and outright lies, they give a bad report to the people. They said they are stronger than we are. From a physical perspective, maybe. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not. They said, we are not able to go up against the people. That's a lie. They were able to go up against the people. God was with them. They said, it's a land that devours its inhabitants. That's a lie. They said, we saw the Nephilim. That's a lie. Okay, God destroyed the Nephilim. Go back, Genesis 8. The Nephilim are destroyed during the flood. Doesn't mean that there weren't giants there, but they're exaggerating. They're stretching the truth. They're trying to get the people to be afraid. They said, we're like grasshoppers in our own sight. And that was certainly true. They were, and that was part of the problem, is they didn't see themselves. They saw themselves in light of their enemies rather than in light of God who was with them. So we'll pick up in Numbers 14 next week and consider the impact of this bad report and how God responds to that and how the faith of Caleb, by contrast, is praised.